you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blur Girl, Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski. Hello.
What's up?
Hey.
Hey.
Hello.
We're in the Reverend's chambers.
That's right. We're doing this professional style now.
Yeah, whenever we record in this space, I try to refer to myself as the Reverend Danny Roth.
Don't ever do that.
I don't know if you remember this,
Don't ever do that.
Really?
I don't know.
No, my
I think
very
I can get
first,
away with it. I could pull it off. You don't know.
The first time I was ever recorded with this podcast was in the studio.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Nope. So it's been a while.
It's been over 100 episodes.
Or whatever. It's definitely been well over a year. Anyway, there's all kinds of stuff. There's Batman stuff. There's Birds of Prey stuff. There's a trailer for a movie called Hobbs and Shaw that we literally just watched and all agreed is probably going to make a lot of money. We'll tell you if we liked it or not in a minute. There's Kingdom Hearts, all kinds of things. But before we get to that, we do a thing at the top of every show where we talk about things we're personally geeking out about, things that we like. Adam.
Yeah.
What do you like this week?
I'm a week behind, honestly, but I just watched it and hopefully it's not that much. The statute of limitations is over, which is the season finale of The Good Place. Which is a show I love already, and man, I'm a little lost for words because it was just so well done and beautiful and heartbreaking and interesting, because I think that they kind of went back to it, and I don't want to say spoilers because it's not that long since the episode's been out in case you haven't watched it, but they went back to a trope that they've used a lot on this show.
It's a trope that actually three other shows in the same week utilized.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
It was a weird week. I wrote about it in the last week in Geek Roundup.
Yeah.
Is that The Good Place and Legacies and Supergirl and I forget what the other one was, but there was just a whole bunch of shows that utilized this trope that you're talking about.
And yeah, but so The Good Place has done it multiple times, but... And so you would think that if they do it again, oh, you're like, oh, no, they're doing the same thing again. But it's executed so well and the characters portraying it do it so well that it just really was resonant and beautiful and sad. And my thing about these shows, this show and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which are both produced by the same team, is that they've basically put the lie to the idea that in order for characters to be interesting, they have to be assholes. Because most of the characters on those shows, especially the main characters, are all people you're rooting for. They're all fundamentally decent people. And they're still interesting and compelling characters. And The Good Place's season finale was a great, great example of that. So yeah, that for me was just the biggest genre thing of the week. I watched it twice in a row. I enjoyed it so much. So great job, The Good Place. And obviously, I'm looking forward to seeing where they pick up next season.
Yeah, you should look at my tweets if you've seen it, and you'll find a video where
I was going to say, anything you say after looking at my tweets is...
I was referring to the children at home.
Oh.
I showed the thing to you already,
which did.
Is that I turned the sound off on the music that they used and replaced it with a well-known song, and it kind of lines up perfectly. I don't even want to say what the song is in case... People haven't seen it, but if you've seen it...
Can't say the ending, can't say the song.
It's true.
Guys, I'm confused.
Something happened, and there was something about it.
I'll spoil this. Adam is a legit snack. Now people know.
I don't know what that means.
Wait, this Adam?
Yeah, that Adam right there. He's a legit snack. They say it in the episode. I'm a legit snack.
Oh, right. That's
you true. Watched it twice, and you do anyway.
Yeah, I'm old, and my memory is fading.
That's fair. Yeah. You are old and faded.
It's true.
Hey, Karima. Neither old nor faded.
I'll tell your friends. Thanks.
What's going on with you?
Well, two things, actually. One thing happened in the middle of our podcast last week. I became an auntie.
Yay!
So there is a new little geek, new little flirt girl in my family.
Toy.
So excited.
I'm assuming all geeky gifts have been given.
Well, actually, she delivered early, so we didn't get there.
Oh,
so and now there's like the polar vortex and all this kind of craziness.
Right.
So we're going to be going down hopefully next week. But yay. And the other thing I'm geeking out about is yesterday I got a chance to interview voiceover talents, legends really, Christopher Sabat and Monica Rial. Christopher Sabat is the voice of Vegeta and Piccolo in Dragon Ball. All of the Dragon Ball movies, not just Dragon Ball Super Broly that is out. And he is also the voice of one of my favorite characters, All Might, in My Hero Academia. And then Monica Rial, who is the voice of Bulma, and she's also doing voiceover work on Genlock, which is out for Rooster Teeth. And it was just a hilarious conversation. It was great. I'm a fan of both of theirs. And it was just wonderful talking to these two legends in anime, which... For those of you who I want to do like Danny, who would follow me on Twitter, know that I'm a big anime fan. So that was just really fun for me. And he actually gave me a Plus Ultra that is going to be on my phone forever.
I don't know what that means, but I am so excited for you.
That's okay. I don't know what you're talking about with the good place.
There you go.
It sounds like a Plus.
An Ultra
Some
Plus.
Some might even say an Ultra Plus.
I would say that's Plus good. Maybe even double Plus good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you.
Well, that's that.
Yep.
That's
moving
that segment.
On.
Bye, everybody.
Oh, come on.
What?
You're going to make me beg for it.
Yes.
Danny, please tell me what you were geeking out about this week. Please. I need it.
So here. All right. So
not only is he a snack, he's begging.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
So I have spent most of this week playing Resident Evil 2, the remake. It is brutal.
It is disgusting. I told you. I
forgot,
did 30 minutes and I had to walk away.
I forgot how hard and dumb it is, though. It's just these moments in Resident Evil games where it's you must get a book to put in a hand on a statue
exactly.
that you turn
yep.
that gets you a red jewel that then you put into the top of a box to open the box to find a police badge, and then the police badge has got a USB stick in it that you use on a computer.
This is why I play Tekken. I can't. I need to turn it on and fight something. I can't do
that. That's actually, that's rather old school adventure game stuff. I mean, that's like 1980s adventure game mechanics.
It is the thing about Resident Evil that has always been the most throwbacky of video game stuff.
And then if you had a crappy controller, you couldn't grab things. And yeah, I stopped playing that game early. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's, I enjoy it.
Too stressful.
And then the other thing is that I watched The Orville, and I just don't know how to feel about some of the stuff that they're doing, because it is as though you're wearing a very cozy sweater that you've had for 30 years, because they will just take things whole cloth from Star Trek The Next Generation. So the episode that aired this week is, if you've ever seen, there's an episode called In Theory, where Data tries to date somebody on Next Gen. And in this episode, their Data fill-in character, Isaac, is trying to date the Doctor. Now, she initiates it, and that's a difference, and there's some other differences along the way, but it's so similar, and I am curious to see how people feel about how many parallels and how many places that they sort of pull, because sometimes it goes a little further than homage. To me, I like it some weeks, and then other weeks I am kind of uncertain of my feelings, so I'm curious to see how other people feel about it, but I'm still watching it.
A funny thing that you can relate to, Danny, is somebody sent me, their version of the Klingons. I don't know what they're called in that world.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody sent me like three pictures of their Klingon and was like, is this what they're doing on Star Trek Discovery? And I'm like, no, that's not
although
Discovery.
Their Worf stand-in, Bordas, does grow a mustache in this episode.
Oh, God.
That's the bit. That's the weird Seth MacFarlane bit of the week, is Klingon grows a mustache. It's pretty funny.
Okay.
Anyway, that's what's going on with my week. Now, we're going to talk about a different video game, a video game that has taken 13 years to come out. And the only way that this can be discussed is not with Adam Swiderski, who has not played it, even though he got a start in video game journalism. Nope, not this time. We were pulling in our own video editor, our own producer, editor, predator, Aaron LoCascio, to come in and
what a
speak.
Title, predator. And,
yep.
Still, it's so weird to hear it.
Yeah. I had never heard the title prior to working at Wire. So I don't know if it's a term that gets thrown around
in
other places.
Yeah, it's a term that's been used a lot. And it's one that I, and it's funny, it takes a minute to get used to because it's not
it
spelled like it sounds, and it sounds
right,
very,
right?
Like, I don't know, illegal.
Yeah.
It always sounded to me like, hey, we came up with a really cool name for you're going to do the work of two people. Anyway.
Right.
But you are a big Kingdom Hearts fan.
I love Kingdom Hearts.
Haven't you already learned how to restore someone's heart after it's been lost?
In time, I awakened to a new purpose.
Harry's right. We're all in this together, Sora.
Did you play the first one when it came out?
Yes.
Okay.
Immediately.
So what?
Yes. 2003. Let's go back.
Okay.
Let's go way back.
All right.
Good times.
Back and back. So it's 2003. Was Squaresoft Square Enix already? I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was a Square game. So it was Disney, Square. So you had Final Fantasy, you had Disney, all together in one big mesh of a game, which they don't explain why.
Did you?
It's just a thing.
And you liked it when it came out. You liked it despite the weird janky camera.
Oh, yeah. I don't care.
You liked it even though Squall was voiced by Angel's own David Boreanaz.
See, I love Angel's. So I was fine with it.
It was the biggest. It was the one thing I remember from that game is going, wow.
Interesting choice.
I mean, Squall
Haley Joel Osment
is
there.
Squall is very broody.
So it's fitting.
Like good
it's a fitting
casting.
Voice.
All right.
I'll take it.
So you liked the first one. The second one. So did you play everything straight through the second one and then all of the weird middle chapters? Did you play
all
them?
All the 11 games in between? Yes.
Kingdom Hearts Key, even though it doesn't look like Key. Did you play that one?
I played Birth by Sleep, which is like the prequel to everything. I played Chain of Memories, which is the in between 1 and 2. I played everything.
What's the best one until you get to 3? What was your
Birth by Sleep? Hands down.
Why?
It's the best one.
Why?
It's kind of the prequel, so it fills in a lot of the story beforehand. And I just like the characters. I like Aqua a lot. I have the Wayfinder, which is one of the symbols from the game. I actually have that tattooed on my arm.
Wow.
That I got right after me and my sister share that tattoo. So that's our shared tattoo moment from Kingdom Hearts. Actually, my whole arm is Kingdom Hearts.
Wow.
Yeah. I have two big Kingdom Hearts tattoos on my left arm.
So we should take a picture of it and put it on.
You can if you'd like to.
And then we'll put it in the article so that people know that you're legit.
So people know I'm legit. Like people used to, when I worked for Game Trailers and I used to do a lot of video content for them, they knew me as like, because they were West Coast based, they were like, oh, the girl with the Kingdom Hearts tattoos. I was like, the girl with the dragon tattoo? No. I was that girl.
I want to make that movie.
Right?
The girl with the Kingdom Hearts tattoo.
I'll star in it. I'm fine with it.
All right,
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll go. We'll pitch it. We'll do
pitch
a pitch meeting.
Yeah, pitch it to all the people.
2019. Anything can happen.
If Kingdom Hearts can happen. Yeah. I'm still in shock it actually happened.
Okay.
Like, it's still like, I'm not believing it. Like, I still think I'm going to wake up one day and be like, no.
It's all a dream. Oh, I mean, yeah, we're inside of the snow globe now.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, literally, we're in a winter squall, so.
Yeah. Anyways,
so how is it so far? How many hours have you played? How is it? Tell me everything.
I have like that thing called a job. So I'm only unfamiliar. I know, unfamiliar with it, but 8 hours in. So I'm only like through like the first like two worlds. So I'm not that deep into it yet.
How is the fighting mechanic?
It's interesting. They added a couple of new features to it that give it a little something. It makes the battle mechanics a little easier, I think. I always play on proud mode because they give you three choices.
Oh, that's the one where you can't level up, right? Is that the deal?
Well, it just makes it harder to level up.
Oh, okay.
And you can put zero EXP on if you'd like to not have that feature on. So I play on proud mode, so it's a little bit harder, but they added like different little battle mechanics, and they added you can have like a Disney attraction be like a kind of battle mode feature that you put on. So yeah, it's interesting.
How have they dealt with the story between everything? I know that they put out their YouTube videos, and then there's also
their explainer videos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I didn't watch them and had never played a Kingdom Hearts game and I tried to play Kingdom Hearts 3, how shit out of luck would I be?
Very.
Okay.
I don't think, my friend is trying, he's like, can I play Kingdom Hearts without playing any of the other games? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I don't think so. I think you would know what the hell was going on, like at all. I don't know how enjoyable it would be because there's a lot of heavy cutscenes where you're just not playing. You're just like watching stuff. And if you're not invested in the story nor have no idea what's going on, I think you'd be a little mad lost.
So wait, where does it pick up? Is there a time jump or...
It picks up pretty much after they did this other side game called Dream Drop Distance, and it takes place right after that. I know. I don't know what to tell you. So it's another side game. It was good.
What have you liked about this version so far?
I like that I can play as Riku in this one.
Okay.
Which is new. And you could play as him in the side games, but never in the PlayStation version. So I like that feature. I like the battle mechanics so far. Like I said, it makes it a little bit easier, but it gives you more options. So you're not just button mashing. It gives you a little bit more, it's a little more strategy involved. I like the world so far. I'm really excited that there's a Tangled world. So I'm excited to get to that part. And Big Hero 6 is in this one too, which is really fun. So there's a lot of newer things. I would have loved a Star Wars world. We were like speculative that that might be added when Disney bought them years ago, but it didn't happen. Whatever. It's fine. I'll accept it. But cool. It's a great game. I'm shocked it came out. It's 2.9 maybe.
And now we can just place bets on how long the Final Fantasy VII remake will take to come out.
I don't think that's ever happening.
Always something.
I don't think it's ever happening.
You never know.
No, anyway, maybe.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Get out.
All right, I'm leaving. Bye.
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 That is not how we treat our guests. Oh my God.
Aaron's not a guest. If it's video content, she's my boss. So actually, I've really shot myself in the foot.
I was going to say, then you're fired.
Yep. Well, it was a great show.
Hey, did I miss anything?
And a good life. Nah. No, yes. All right. Missed out on the best the show's ever been.
Well, that's true.
Hey.
I wasn't part of it.
You want to talk about Batman?
Let's talk about some Batman.
Or I guess DC in general.
Some Batmans.
DC had the week of weeks.
Indeed.
So Ben Affleck. Not a Batman anymore.
That's right.
Batman no longer.
Not going to miss him.
Whoa. Off?
That's my hot take and I'm done. Thank you and good night.
Do you have any thoughts about him not doing it anymore?
I'm happy for him because I think it was pretty clear.
That he hated it?
Yeah, and did not want to do it.
Clearly not happy.
Honestly, I think anybody who takes that role has to have a spine of total and complete iron given the amount of criticism that you're going to deal with and... just what comes with it. That's certainly changed, I think, even since they cast Christian Bale. You know, it's just now the geekosphere is so intense. And given everything that was going on in Ben Affleck's personal life and some of the demons that he was dealing with, I think having that added pressure probably was a lot. So I'm glad that he was able to move on. Honestly, I think he was underserved by the films he was in. I think he was a better Batman than those movies deserved. Just because I'm not a fan of, honestly, either one.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, the playing field that he was given to play in wasn't terrific.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I think this ties a little bit... The reason I'm actually feeling okay about this is because it ties into a little bit about the other news items around Matt Reeves' Batman film, right? Director Matt Reeves still wants to make his solo Batman film, is in the works, apparently, still, and they're saying it's going to be a younger Batman, you know, just starting out, detective skills type of thing, and... That's great. We've had a lot of older grizzled Batman lately. And just in general, I think. And I think that, you know, other than on Gotham, honestly, which is why so many people have been so excited about that
particular aspect
of the show. Yeah.
They probably wouldn't hire him for this, but he's great.
Which is unfortunate. I think he should be considered.
There's a lot to learn from Gotham. I believe of all of the Bat-related projects, that's the one that you have to sit and look at and say, okay, from where they started, which was generally agreed upon, not great, to where they wound up, where I think it has 100, I mean, not that Rotten Tomatoes necessarily is an indicator of anything, but it's, I think, the highest rated any season of the show has ever been, the one that they're in right now.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks a lot to how they've evolved those characters, and I certainly think Bruce Wayne, who will become Batman this season, is a big part of that. So yeah, you could certainly look to that to sort of figure it out. But yeah, I keep thinking who are they going to get to take that role? Who's the new Batman?
It's a tough one, and it really depends on what kind of Batman you're talking about. Because again, the news that's come out about Reeves Batman, it's all saying it's going to be about Batman the detective. You know, Batman has always been called the world's greatest detective. Wasn't there a show or something where one of the characters called him detective all the time?
Oh, yeah. You're talking about Ra's al Ghul.
There you go. From the animated series. Yeah. So I think that even plays into it because we had some of that with Christian Bale, I think, in Batman Begins and a little bit in The Dark Knight where you get to see him trying to solve a mystery of where a bullet came from or something like that. But we've never had just a straight up whodunit starring Batman. And I think that might be really cool rather than making it a movie where there have to be 15 different action scenes of him doing, you know, ninja kung fu against 15 guys. It's like, let's put Batman in a thriller, a mystery, you know, and do it that way. I think that would be really interesting. And I think that how you cast for that is different than how you cast for action Batman a little bit. So
yeah, for sure. It does make me sad for New Mutants where they said, oh, it's going to be mutants in a horror movie, which I was so into and is a movie that, who knows, it's probably going to wind up on Hulu or something now.
Yeah.
Which is killer. Because yeah. I think that was the one thing that when Fox started talking about that stuff and started doing, you know, Deadpool, this sort of R-rated comedy take, I think that it really sort of taught some lessons, just like Logan, same thing.
Yes.
If somebody approached a Batman movie the way that James Mangold approached Logan, would be great.
Yeah.
That's where I think it ought to be. I think Matt Reeves is certainly capable of it. And I don't think you have to have an old crotchety person in the role in order to pull off a serious drama like that.
I agree.
So why not? I mean,
or like, you know, this is Batman confronting young Batman confronting something horrible for the first time, you know, like something really stark and threatening for the very first time. I mean, is a really compelling story, I think. So I don't know. I mean, it's a tough thing because again, you're right. I don't think there's anybody who immediately jumps out at me and says, this person should be Batman next 100%, you know? And I hope that the statements about what this movie is going to be, remain true and don't get put through a studio car wash where we don't have 15 fight scenes. It's not a good superhero film. You know, I like that, you know, we're seeing this with Joker is going to be something different and, you know, not to jump into the next topic or anything, but Birds of Prey and some of the stuff we've seen around that it's going to be different. So, yeah, give me that. Give me a slow burn pot boiler Batman film. I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, before I don't want to talk about Birds of Prey immediately because related to Batman specific is the word that because of Into the Spider-Verse, because it was so beloved. Now, the rumor is 2022, Batman Beyond.
Yeah. But honestly, I don't know whether or not that was because of Spider-Man, because I had rumblings of that, like, earlier last year.
Well, it probably became a lot more likely.
Yeah,
they probably just decided we're going to put it on the map. Here's the thing. I'm not against that, because I've always felt that, actually, DC's animated movies and animated, like even straight to video stuff has always been better than Marvel's outside of obviously Spider-Man that just dropped. And outside of the only exception I think I would have had was Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes. That one I thought was really good, but I always loved DC's animation team. And I've always said, I don't know why the writers for DC's animation team can't jump over to the live action. And they would make some amazing scripts.
Yeah. But I think it's great too, because as much as it might be interesting to see something like Batman Beyond rendered in live action, I should say. I think that taking the Spider-Verse has shown us particularly that the amount of leeway creatively that animation gives you can really benefit this material. And I don't necessarily want to see Batman Beyond tamed visually, you know, for a live action representation. I want to see them go crazy with it and make it as over the top and, you know, visually compelling as the cartoon was.
Yeah, I guess I don't. The thing about live action is that unless you were going to have somebody Blade Run it in, you know, unless there was going to be something that looked like the beginning of Blade Runner where you've got the Terrell Corporation and all that stuff. I mean, if you're capable of doing that, but nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to spend that kind of money on a Batman Beyond property. But would they spend Into the Spider-Verse amounts of money? I think so,
right,
for sure. And maybe then you achieve, I think, ultimately the same effect. So, yeah, I'm way, way, way on board with that visual style. And in fact, looking at it now, thinking about Spider-Verse, I'm surprised that I hadn't already thought about Batman Beyond, because you can kind of see.
Oh, totally.
How I mean, it I was makes
so
perfect
into,
sense.
I was, and I was so into the show. And I mean, honestly, for me, I'm kind of looking forward to old, jaded Batman,
oh, yeah,
who is just like done with everybody and just sitting up in his mansion. And like, I just really, I'm looking forward to that. Also, there are so many different baddies and so many different worlds that came out of Batman Beyond. And it's, again, that YA space. And right now, Spider-Man is dominating.
So. And I just think it speaks to, I mean, it's just so great, the era of superhero movies that we're entering, because there's been a lot of talk about, oh, superhero fatigue and how are we going to battle it? And everybody's trying to make a shared universe, et cetera, et cetera. And we're kind of reached the post shared universe era almost, or it looks like that based on some of these projects that are coming out, where the pressure to do that is off a little bit because superhero movies are so successful overall that there's not necessarily a worry that you're going to put out a Batman Beyond and it's going to tank because it's not connected to every other Batman movie that's come out. You know, you can take a little more chances with the story and the style and everything. Again, Spider-Verse being the perfect example of that, and be successful. And I love that. The more of that there is and the less factory made superhero movies feel in the future, the happier I'm going to be.
Yeah. And I love Terry McGinnis. So if you were going to pick a character, a villain from Batman Beyond, who would you want?
I don't know. That's so tough. I want them all. The reason why I'm saying I want them all is because I want it to be like not just a movie. I want it to be a series. That's my thing. I want to bring the series back. And I know that sounds crazy, but I would love,
I mean,
if
who knows?
I would love the movie to kick off like a whole thing. If DC Universe is still around, a new series on DC Universe or something.
Yeah. I mean, I won't get this, but I always had a real deep fondness for Ink.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
Why? Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know.
Just something
I thought she
resonated.
Was such an interesting take on the kind of the Clayface idea. So I always liked her. I always thought she was kind of interesting. And I always, I don't know. I thought that would be a cool visual thing to play with in the Spider-Verse style space. Be kind of cool looking. Because she's kind of a mix between Clayface and Venom almost in a way. Because of like the inky blackness,
yeah,
of her.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's exciting.
I was thinking more Venom, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Here, have a delightful word from our sponsor.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Anyway, so you've got that and then Birds of Prey.
Because
it was 20 seconds of a tease.
It was.
Yeah.
And if you squinted, you saw Harley Quinn. Like, it was one of those, what am I looking at? And then, oh, this is Birds of Prey?
It was a great late 2000s music video.
Thank you. Oh my God. I was like, the director of Angel called, like, what am I looking at?
It was, here's what somebody pointed this thing out, which is not as black and white as all this, but the difference between the male gaze and the female gaze,
yeah,
is really well encapsulated between the costume design for Harley Quinn that we saw in the Suicide Squad movie that came out in 2016, and what I think we've seen of this costume that she's wearing in this little 20-second clip, which looks like it's made of the strings from Mylar balloons. You know, it's just, there's something that is...
I've seen it before, though. I feel like, goodness, I feel like it was on one of Gail Simone's runs or... But I know John Boy Myers did a cover with that cellophane-looking thing. So I was just cracking up. I did the same thing. I was like, okay.
And that's the difference.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's a costume that it's made and you look at it and you think... Harley Quinn would wear that. Harley Quinn would really be feeling herself in that, having a good time. She's not really necessarily trying to appeal to anybody but herself.
And they started with the bat and not her butt.
Yeah, that's nice. That's really nice. I mean, yeah, Margot Robbie was pretty honest about those hot pants, that they were very unpleasant. And that's the thing. I don't know who can watch those hot pants and go, God, this is so gratifying.
I don't know
who can
watch.
Uncomfortable.
I don't know who
she
can
didn't
watch
look uncomfortable
the movie.
In this.
I don't know who can watch the movie and not say that. Watch the movie and say, God, this is so gratifying.
Yeah.
This is so not uncomfortable.
But it's nice. It's nice to sort of get it. It's nice to see. I think that's what because people reacted very positively to this very small thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear anybody go, eh. Everyone said, whoa, you know, and I think it is because it pops in a way that continues this theme of DC trying to be exciting, visually pleasing, something that is not necessarily just a grim, dark thing. Sure, you've got Renee Montoya, you know, drinking some booze. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Well, it looks like they're at a party.
And I'm just happy to see Renee Montoya at all.
And I think part of the thing, too, is that a lot of these DC projects have kind of been nebulous for a while. Oh, yeah. We're getting 15 Joker movies. There's a Birds of Prey. there's a bunch of different stuff that's just been floating out there in the ether as projects they could potentially do.
And yeah, I still don't know why it's called Sirens, but everything else.
Yeah, but so to see something that shows you that this is actually the Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous, whatever it is, of Harley Quinn is actually happening and in production and there is material there is exciting. It's and again, it lends, like you said, this idea that DC is trying new things and trying different things. And I think that that's great. That's great for the franchise. It's great for movies. It's great for fandom, etc.
And the other thing that I just want to add on to what you're talking about with just the female gaze and things like that is that Margot Robbie has quietly made a commitment behind the scenes to actually have a lot of female directors and women behind the camera and in post-production and stuff, which I thought was really cool. She didn't like make a big banner or anything about it. It's just something that's been, she's quietly been doing, and I commend her for that.
Yeah, it's helpful. It shows in the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that there's a false perception of what will get butts in seats. Do you know what I mean? And I think that the lesson is slowly being learned, right? Suicide Squad did fine money-wise, but
It
did pretty well. But
I think internationally.
I think that even in just the last 2 to 3 years, there has been a real transition in seeing that movies that are successful don't require hot pants. And if anything, that actually can potentially hurt a brand.
Well, it's about to be proven, I think, 100% in when Captain Marvel drops.
Yeah, I think that's another.
I personally think it might make more money than Black Panther. I'm not even exactly. Ooh,
I don't. I am not ready. I would to make bet money that on leap. That not happening.
I mean, we'll see. I don't put my money on anything, but that's an uphill climb. I mean, that was the number one domestic release.
I follow Wesley Snipes' rules. Always bet on black.
Whoa. Panther.
Exactly.
There you go.
Did it. So that happened, and then yes. So James Gunn doing Guardians of the Galaxy 3, probably, unless somehow that changes, but it seems unlikely at this point. Mm-hmm. But he is now officially A, writing the script, and now B, directing the new Suicide Squad
movie. The Suicide Squad is the name of the film.
Which will
have Suicide Squad. So this is a reboot?
They said
a do-over.
Things I read basically said a soft reboot. I don't know what that means. Are we going to see any of the same characters? I have no idea.
As long as I don't have to hear Killer Croc talk about BET, I'll be fine. Or Soul Train or whatever it was. That was ridiculous.
Oh, boy. I do want King Shark, though.
Yes.
That's my one request. I want King Shark if they're going to do a new Suicide Squad movie. Because they should just go as far to the wall. If they're going to have James
Gunn. Or Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah.
I hope they bring Will Smith back.
Yeah, no, I think
I thought he was great.
I think they will.
I mean, that was one of my biggest issues with the original film is there was such a charisma gap. Basically, Will Smith and Margot Robbie are movie stars, and you could see that every time they were on screen, and everybody else was just
waiting in line.
Yeah, in a different film, almost.
Wait for a coffee.
You know, and you could feel the vortex of charisma just sucking off of the screen when those two were not on screen. So, yeah, bring him back. I would love to see that and build a new team around him or, you know, whatever. But I think, I don't know. I, to be completely honest, I like the Guardians of the Galaxy films. I was never a huge James Gunn fan before that.
But this feels like a right fit for him, doesn't it?
It's a different team, different universe, different company.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems as though he took a bunch of misfits and made them a family. And this is, I think at its core, I mean, it's called Suicide Squad. It's not quite designed to be as heartfelt. It's a little more cynical by trade. Otherwise, I don't think it's so far off the mark from where he's already lived.
It's not bad news. I'll say that if you're going to announce a director for another Suicide Squad film, as much as I actually didn't like the first Suicide Squad film.
It's not the worst thing we've heard this week.
It makes you go, oh, yeah, okay. You know, and I think that that's all you can ask for at this stage in the development process is just, like Danny said, it makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. And then, yeah, did you
want to... And so little in the world makes sense. So, you know, we have to hold on to the things that do.
Yes. Yeah. Bring in Plastique. There you go. I answered it. Yeah, that's happening. Did you want to talk about Supergirl real quick? Like,
just
fast.
Just real quick, basically, this week, CW debuted basically the first transgender superhero on television in the character called Dreamer. And the actress playing Dreamer is Nicole Maines, the New England transgender activist. I don't know if you guys remember, back in 2014, there was a discrimination suit that she won for students on her college campus to get access to campus bathrooms that align with their gender identity, not with what they were assigned at birth.
I play Nia Nal, who is going to be the first trans superhero on television. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, this is like breaking news.
And breaking news, it's also breaking molds. Like, this is massive.
And then the fact that she's basically now, I don't know, series regular, because CW is funny. They bring people in and out. But she definitely has showed up for an episode. Kara figured out there's something different about her. Kara.
Sure.
Yeah. And
she's been around for a while. At the end of this episode, there's a suit in a box that she's going to wear. And she's sort of accepted that this power is hers. It's a power that she didn't want. It's interesting. So the story for Nia Nal, that's her character's name, is... Yeah, she's sort of shown up. She's a journalist. She's working with these people. She discovers that she has a power. She's kind of aware of it. But the deal about her ability to dream the future is something that she didn't think she was supposed to get. There was this whole deal where she's part alien, and it gets passed down through the women in the family. And so her sister was the one that had been preparing her whole life, thought she was going to get it. And realizing that instead Nia's like, oh, it's going to be me. She doesn't want it because she feels this tremendous
pressure,
guilt also because, you know, her sister's done all the work. But the way that it plays out, I have to say, I've been kind of iffy on Supergirl this season. Man, they nailed something so well. They made such a big deal. They're going to go back to Nia's hometown because there's aliens there. Everybody's cool. Everybody's accepting of things. Yes. She's trans, but obviously if we can handle aliens, we can handle anything. And yet, you put the sister in a situation where she gets something of hers taken away, and immediately she says, I don't understand why you even get the powers. You're not a real girl.
Yeah.
And that is truly, I tweeted this and it's true. That is the most peak cis shit I have ever seen in my life. And it is very typical. Having personally lived through these types of experiences, it's very weird how people will suddenly turn something around on you. Yes, you are what you say you are, but unless it harms me in some way, but I'm the real one, so I should have got the thing. I remember I had an experience where I went to a party. And suddenly people felt like you had to be split down the line, you know, because I would want to talk to the women about, you know, like someone's getting pregnant. I want to talk about that. But then I also wanted to go out and drink an IPA. And they said, you can't have both. And I said, what? Why? Cisgender men and women are allowed to have both. It was so strange to see somebody all of a sudden when they were unhappy about something, declare a difference or to say that you have to do one thing
or
the other. And, and I think that this episode kind of, captured a moment that's very real and very hurtful, but profound for her. I mean, it pushes that character forward in a way that is actual, honest representation. And so I think that the show in that regard is done very well. It's hard for me.
And she's supposed to suit up in the next episode. I think she's literally supposed to use her powers and everything in the next episode. Well, that's what the promos look
like. Anyway. I think it's always hard for me to accept that Kara Zor-El, her whole bit every episode is that she's a refugee and she's so alien and so other. And I think, sure, that's true, but you've cast this very beautiful blonde hair, blue-eyed, thin white woman to be
Superman is
the
also
refugee.
The same thing happened with Superman. He's considered a refugee. I mean, honestly, then it speaks to what does a refugee look like? So, yeah. And we don't have time for that on this podcast. Yeah. But it's an interesting conversation. And I think that thanks for sharing that, because I didn't realize it. I saw that scene too, but I didn't even think of it. All I thought of was the double entendre of the words, like, you're not a real girl. I didn't think about like how it could affect people. So that's interesting.
Yeah, no, it was an enormous moment. I think it's actually one of the best things that Supergirl has ever done. Certainly, it's the thing that impressed me most this season. Anyway, so that's a lot of DC stuff that happened. What else did you want to talk about, Adam? What else is on the plate?
Hobbs and Shaw.
We're gonna need the best trackers in the business. Luke Hobbs.
I'm what you call an ice cold can of whoop ass.
Deckard Shaw.
I'm what you might call a champagne problem.
You know, we've toyed on Sci-Fi Wire with whether to cover the Fast and the Furious films over time, because
now we don't have to.
Originally, the series was basically, you know, Point Break with cars. And it's just, you know, I've been rewatching the Fast and Furious films that are on Netflix streaming, Fast and Furious, Fast Too Furious, and
Tokyo Drift.
And it's really funny to go back and watch those movies and then watch, you know, the Fate of the Furious, where they're stealing nuclear submarines and this globe-trotting James Bond spy-fi adventure that it is now. So, you know, we've been back and forth on that because nothing in these movies is realistic anymore. So you could say technically they're fantasy films of a sort, but interestingly enough, the Hobbs and Shaw trailer, they're going full sci-fi now.
They are.
Idris Elba is playing the villain.
They're in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, and he has some kind of technology implanted in him or something that basically gives him superpowers from the look of it. And The Rock and Jason Statham, who are playing characters with names, but basically they're playing The Rock and Jason Statham.
It's the Transporter and The Rock.
That's really what they should have just made. The Rock and Jason Statham taking on actual Idris Elba. And everybody would have gone and seen it anyway.
That's true.
But you add the Fast and Furious name, I have to imagine it's going to do pretty well. But anyway, so we have The Rock and Jason Statham tracking down superpowered Idris Elba across the globe. I thought the trailer was fun.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I really am here for it. And they also look like they're having a lot of fun.
Yes.
It's very campy, very kind of comic book-y. And it's one of those things that I'm like, yeah, we need a couple of these. We need a few of these. Just fun, really well executed stunts with storylines that are nebulous. But one thing that Fast and Furious has always been good for, and why it's made billions and billions of dollars, is that it's casting of international actors and setting it in places so that in every single country, everybody's got something and someone to see. So I can't wait to see some of the rest of the characters that are cast as well. Idris is a superhero. We've been kind of waiting for this.
Super villain.
Well, yeah, that's true. Super villain. It's funny because in the trailer, he explains it. He's like, oh, yeah, I've got all the powers, but I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
But it's that level of, I mean, that's, I think, what saved this franchise, obviously, is that level of self-awareness and willingness to just be like, this isn't real. We're going way over the top. It's going to be goofy. Vin Diesel is basically indestructible, and that's fine. And I think, you know, this continues that trend, and perhaps even more so. And it looks fun. It's going to be what it's going to be, what it's going to be, you know. And if you're looking for serious cinema, this is not your film. But The Rock and Jason Statham fighting Idris Elba. That's all you have to say. And those three people alone will move huge amounts of tickets.
And the banter.
And then, of course, we'll get the sequel where Idris Elba is a good guy, because this is what they do. They find super amazing, charismatic actors, and they make them the villain in one movie, and then the next movie. It happened with The Rock. It happened with Jason Statham.
And Jason Statham will be like the bad guy in the next one, because he'll be some type of super spy.
Well, the thing is, it'll look like he's the bad guy, but actually he's been helping the good guys all along. And it's all been a setup. That was the plot of The Fate of the Furious, but ultimately, I hope I didn't spoil that for anyone, by the way.
Wow.
If you've yet to see The Fate of the Furious, I have no sympathy for you, because you have missed out on cinematic gold. But
what do you think, Danny?
I think that they should. When are they going to do the version that's wizards?
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, Statham is Snape.
You do like a.
Oh my god, my mind is now blown.
Yeah, you do like an Arthurian thing. Say that.
Oh man, well they did a Transformers movie called First Night, so I don't know if we want to dive back into that yet. But yeah, they could do. I don't know. I want to do something. Yeah, Merlin shows up.
Exactly.
And Merlin's played by, I don't know.
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews.
Buff. We've never had. Buff Merlin.
We've never had. Buff Merlin.
And he would be the perfect addition to this franchise.
Oh my gosh! All right.
See, boom, cinematic gold right there.
No, you know what's really funny? I had actually thought about that about Aladdin. If the genie was Terry Crews and not Will Smith,
yeah,
it would have been such a different movie.
Yeah, I'll put Terry Crews in any old thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, so I mean, obviously we don't know a ton about this movie yet, other than what I said, that it's these two guys basically bantering with each other and fighting Idris Elba.
But whoever cut the trailer is brilliant.
I do think it's interesting that they're going full science fiction now.
Yeah.
I mean, everything up to now, even the Fate of the Furious, as outlandish and kind of beyond as it was, you could still say, well, nobody has superpowers.
Triple X was the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have superpowers, but he's doing insane things in his car.
That no human being could ever do. Yeah. But now, at least to add that element of saying straight up, this is something that's science fiction. It's an interesting way for them to go.
Here's what I'll say. There was a joke in Teen Titans Go to the Movie where they kept coming up with trailers for movies that were going to come out.
Yes.
Robin kept getting more and more upset because he kept thinking it was going to be the movie about him.
And
they do one that's just called Batmobile.
Yeah.
Why would you not make that movie Batman, but the focus is on the car shit? Be entertained?
So it's like Knight Rider, but Bat Rider.
Well, what if it was a situation where, you know, the Joker or somebody set up some sort of game where Batman had to win a series of street races in the Batmobile. No fighting, just racing. And then fighting at the end. But as long as
Terry Crews can still show up.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Terry Crews is there.
Well, Terry Crews is Batman in this scenario.
We cracked this formula.
I mean,
you know what? It was going around Twitter that people wanted Oscar Isaac as Batman. I'm also for that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be all right. I wouldn't say no.
Is he fighting Terry Crews?
Ooh.
Yeah, that would
be
amazing.
Who do you root for in that scenario?
Who do you even pick?
I don't think I could see Terry Crews as a villain now. He's too... I've watched too much Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, I can see him eating yogurt and smiling and helping people out.
Right.
That's what I've also seen him eating yogurt and fighting injustice with his mind.
He's also President Camacho. But President Camacho ultimately was a sympathetic character.
Yeah, I mean, they all were. It was a sad situation.
Yeah.
That sad future where people thought that electrolytes will never get there.
Although, I'll be honest, I rewatched Black Panther recently because it's on streaming and, you know, this whole thing's happening where they're releasing it in theaters, so I wanted to revisit. And I remember before that movie came out, I was like, no, Michael B. Jordan is a villain. I can't handle it, because he was just so charismatic and likable in Chronicle and Friday Night Lights. And I didn't think I could handle it. And then he was amazing. So maybe Terry Crews would be a fantastic villain. It would break my heart into a million tiny little crying pieces. But it might be great. Who knows?
I'm going to give you 5 minutes to weigh in on the Dark Universe. 5 minutes
that's
about, have you
that's
got.
Accurate. I think that's as much as we need.
That's as much as we need. Okay, yeah. So the Dark Universe is no more. They're still going to make it an Invisible Man movie. Invisible Man movie is going to be directed by, doing great, Lee Wannell, who co-created Saw and Insidious. And so it's going to be kind of a Blumhouse joint.
It's horror.
But this is not, I mean, you know, the Dark Universe comes up because Invisible Man was going to be connected to it, but this is not that anymore.
No,
right?
It's nothing at all like that, because that really all we knew about that, I remember, was Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
And I think that I'm all there. I mean, listen, I'm not a big horror movie fan, but I think making a good modern Invisible Man horror film is a good thing. I mean, what was the last one we had? The Hollow Man, which... Hollow Man.
There's stuff about Hollow Man that I don't hate. It's an interesting concept.
But it has not aged well. Have you watched it recently?
No, it hasn't. I'll tell you, you know what has kind of aged interesting is Confessions of an Invisible Man starring Chevy Chase and Daryl Hannah. That movie is bizarre, but it got a re-release on Blu-ray. I actually find the concept of the Invisible Man to be fascinating, right? Because on the one hand, if you could control it,
right,
it's great.
Right.
But to suddenly, it's a kind of body horror that sort of has such a psychological impact because it renders you irrelevant. You're just not present.
Well, and you're not even being able to see yourself, I think, is something that's kind of horrifying. Speaking of, you know, loss of identity, loss of the self, etc.
I just think that the idea of exploring that I think, I mean, Blumhouse has definitely branched out. I think that them and A24 and a lot of them other groups.
As long as he doesn't become a bad guy. There was a version of the Invisible Man in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen that was nasty.
Well, no, but that's the point. I mean, he does in most versions of the Invisible Man.
He has to eventually lose it.
Lose his mind.
Lose his mind, yes. But like, this guy was a serial rapist. It was really bad. Like, it was.
Oh, I don't know that I quite need that.
That's what I'm saying.
That seems aggressive.
Not just mentally lose it. He just.
No, I know. I read.
Yeah, it was just, and even how he died was really horrible. But it was, the body horror part, I'm down for. I could see how that can make somebody crazy. Like in the same way that I don't remember the name of the disease, but it's a type of insomnia that happens to blind people because they cannot tell what time of day it is.
Oh wow!
And it starts making them nuts.
Well, that's horrifying.
Yes, but it's this that kind of thing. Like maybe there must be some type of mental disability that'll happen if you can't. See yourself. You can't see yourself pick something up. You can't see yourself look in the mirror. You can't see, you know. So,
yeah, that kind seems of like, yeah.
Is it a form of dysmorphia, I guess you could
call
it?
And listen, like, Blumhouse generally does pretty well with horror movies. They have a really good track record recently. And so, and if they're not trying to create a dark universe and just make a good Invisible Man movie, awesome. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'm happy that we're not doing the Dark Universe.
Yeah.
It's a huge relief to me. I mean, I think we all knew it wasn't going to happen, but it's nice to hear that here is a first step away from the explosion.
Yeah. I hope that we're reaching a stage where people are just realizing, listen, Marvel caught lightning in a bottle by doing this the way they did the first time, and trying to do that is just not, it was those specific circumstances, those specific characters, and that specific time in movies, you know, given where we are in the movie scape now, I don't even think that's possible.
And it's fine. Again, we learned so much from Logan and Deadpool, I think, that those are lessons learned. I think as we're seeing there be an enjoyment of the Wonder Woman and Aquaman on their own and the positive reaction to Birds of Prey and things of that.
Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I think these things are sort of telling a much different story. And yeah, when it comes to monster movie mashup, unless you've got Abbott and or Costello involved, just skip it.
Or a bunch of kids. If you want to reboot the Monster Squad, I'm there for that as well.
But the common denominator
Shaggy's a superhero. I'm telling you that. Look, that was revealed this week.
if you can make it a comedy, if you can have that element to it, sure.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the Dark Universe, I don't think was ever, even if it had been executed right from the start, even if The Mummy had been a good movie, I still would have been really iffy on it. Well, I have to be honest.
And I honestly think you could throw certain connective tissue in there. It's like, oh, there's a reference to Dracula. You know, like in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, they've got little, there's the Ark of the Covenant, you know, but there's no, they don't spend a ton of time on it. It's just there. And I think that the problem is now when that happens, people look at that and they say, what does that mean? And there's 50,000 posts on the internet trying to dissect what does this mean for the shared universe thing. It's like, no, it's just a fun little reference to Dracula in your Mummy movie. You know, I don't think you need to be as, what's the word I'm looking for, as galaxy brain about it, you know, where you have to create all this connective tissue. Just throw the stuff in there all together. You know, they are all part of the same world maybe, but they don't have to have a giant crossover Avengers film for the Dark Universe, you know?
Agree. But I want a werewolf movie. That's it. That's my big wish, my big ask.
As long as they're not a teenager, I'm fine.
We haven't had enough of those.
A good werewolf, a really great werewolf movie.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, that's what I want. Anyway, all right.
That makes me want to revisit Wolf, starring Jack Nicholson.
Oh, go ahead.
It's been a long time.
You go for that. Him and James Spader, right?
That is a movie. Yes, that is a movie of its era. I think that would be very interesting to rewatch.
All right. Well, you can go and do that because we're done with this podcast.
All right.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me. Please, if you're not subscribed to Who on the Week, subscribe to it. If you have never given us a review, please give a review. It really helps out. And check out all the other podcasts within the Sci-Fi Wire family. Check out Strong Female Characters and the Phantom Files and Battlestar Galacticast and the official Deadly Class podcast. And also go to Amazon if you've got an Alexa. We've got a whole bunch of podcasts there as well. Where can people find the two of you on the internet?
They can find me, Karima, the Blur Girl, TheBlerGurl, on mostly Twitter and Instagram.
People can find me on my GeoCities page.
Oh, God.
At geocities.com/edu. No, it's, I'm usually on Instagram at Rock the Faces. Also, if you're on Reddit, I sometimes pop up there as Jorge and the Kraken at, on various subs.
That's new information.
Yeah, man.
We, and you're sharing it with the planet.
I'm trying to be more social, you know? I show up, I
on
talk about
Reddit?
These. Yeah.
Reddit's a scary place.
No, it's great because you can you only go to the places that you want to go to and where they're talking about things you want to talk about. I don't have to go to R the Donald or whatever, you know, the ones are that I don't particularly want to visit. So anyway, if you're into music, I'm on there talking about music a lot. If you're into The Expanse, I talk about The Expanse. Yeah, so we can have a conversation there.
Tight.
Sharing. I feel like we've, you know.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.